doing scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. Welcome to the last day of 2019. Are you glad to see this year go? I think I am. It's been a tough year, an eventful year. Lots of things has happened. But this has also been the year that I was able to launch this podcast. For several months now, we've had a daily podcast covering the news of the day. And the reason I did this on a daily basis was to lay a very thorough background, a very thorough legacy of articles that would cover the whole spectrum of technocracy. And over the past few months, we've done exactly that. I think we've covered every conceivable story that would point to technocracy, and sometimes multiple times, because stories keep reappearing. But I've covered the whole gamut of technocracy and current stories that you can be looking out for that will give you more of the story. So I'm going to cover a couple of stories today in particular, and this will be the last broadcast that I do a daily podcast from now on, starting in January of 2020. I'll be doing a weekly podcast, typically on Monday or Tuesday, that will be a little bit longer time-wise and that will cover some special topic, not just the news necessarily, although I will reserve the option to talk about news and probably will to some extent. But I'm interested now in doing some interviews with other people that are writing and talking about technocracy in one aspect or another, and bringing to you what they are saying, what they are thinking about technocracy. So this will be a little bit of a change of venue, bringing a slightly different type of information to you, but I can assure you it will be absolutely interesting and enlightening. And the things that I want to talk about today, the first one is the United Nations and the Internet. You might remember in 2016 that I wrote an article titled Technocracy, the Real Reason Why the UN Wants Control Over the Internet. That was a pivotal time in history, I do believe. President Barack Obama was still in charge of the nation's helm, and it was up to him in particular to sign a contract that expires every year, by the way, but to sign a new contract with the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. That's ICANN for short, I-C-A-N-N. And I wrote in that article, by its very nature, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN, is a nonprofit organization exclusively run by technocrats. As such, it is an apolitical body that is happy to serve whatever form of governance exists as long as funding is received and salaries are paid. To a technocrat, a world run by science and technology is better than any other form of governance. That technocrats have played a supporting role in world history is unquestioned. Scientists, engineers, and technicians played a huge role in the communist dictatorship in the former Soviet Union, for instance. See Science in the Soviet Social Order. Technocrats likewise played a central role in the support of Adolf Hitler and National Socialism. In both cases, the technocrat goal was not necessarily communism or Nazism, but rather the methodical exercise of science according to its scientific method. In other words, the process was more important than the outcome. And in both cases, the outcome was not questioned or resisted, but simply accepted. The reason that ICANN formally served the interests of the United States was simply that it answered to our government's judicial, legislative, and executive branches. In other words, the U.S. held the umbrella over ICANN, and that was enough to keep it working for our national interest and not for someone else's national interest. Remember, this is 3 years ago, by the way, that I wrote this article. Obama changed that when he cut ICANN loose on September 30, 2016, by letting the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, that's IANA, contract expire without being renewed. After expiration, we forever lost the right to renew the contract again. So ICANN is now a free agent looking for shelter in the same way that a boll weevil looks for a cotton plant. It needs a host organization in order to practice its craft, and I dare say it doesn't care one whit who that host is. It is no secret that the United Nations is making a play to become host to ICANN. In particular, the UN's International Telecommunications Union, or ITU, run by the People's Republic of China, is expected to play the central role in this effort. However, whether it is the ITU or some other UN agency is immaterial because it will still be the UN in the end. But why the UN? Well, because it is the fountainhead of the plans and operations to establish technocracy as the sole global economic system while destroying capitalism and free enterprise in the process. Technocracy is the issue here. Others know it as sustainable development or green economy, but the correct historical term is technocracy. In February 2015, the head of climate change at the United Nations, Christiana Figueres, stated, and I quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves a task of intentionally within a defined period of time to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution." What is unclear about that? Well, sustainable development, or technocracy, is a resource-driven economic model regulated by energy rather than by supply and demand, plus monetary currencies. In 1938, the original technocrats defined technocracy as, quote, "the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population," close quote. To achieve its utopia goals, the UN must have ICANN's steering wheel and throttle. But while everyone is stressing over internet censorship of websites and the suppression of free speech, the real prize is completely overlooked: the Internet of Things, or the IoT. In terms of follow the money, IoT is expected to generate upwards of $3 trillion by 2025 and is growing at a rate of at least 30% per year. In other words, it is a huge market and money is flying everywhere. If the UN can figure out a way to tax this market, and they will, it will provide a windfall of income and perhaps enough to make it self-perpetuating. Currently, the UN is financed by contributions from member states. But what is the IoT and who cares? Well, IoT are the connections between the inanimate object and the humans that depend upon them. The digital smart meter on your home communicates energy usage via Wi-Fi to your utility company, but it also communicates with other major appliances in your home and can even control them remotely without your consent or knowledge. The smartphone that you carry communicates with cell towers and localized signal receptors to create a map of your every movement. Smart home technology lets your stereo send sound to remote wireless speakers and to light bulbs equipped with sensors. The security cameras that you install to watch over your home while you are on vacation can communicate with other cameras, microphones, the police department, etc. Examples go on and on. Well, ICANN issues the so-called IP addresses that are assigned to all of these devices on a global basis. The original addressing scheme, IPv4, was based on four blocks of up to three digits each, punctuated with a period. For example, 192.168.2.14. This scheme allows for a discrete address for up to 16.8 million devices. A few years ago, IPv4 ran out of numbers, forcing the internet service providers, corporations, and other organizations to improvise internal numbering systems, known as proxy servers, to issue safe addresses to devices within their own domain. These systems are not only fragile, but they're bloated beyond reason and generally easy to hack. And don't we know how many organizations have been hacked in the last several years? To fix this, ICANN devised a new IP numbering system called IPv6, which adds two more blocks of numbers. For example, 192.168.2.16 168.2.14 and then .231.58. This scheme provides for 3.4 times 10 to the 38th power addresses, or 340,282,366,920,938, followed by 24 zeros. There's probably a way to say this number, but I cannot imagine what it would be. It's somewhere between a trillion, trillion unique numbers for every human being on Earth. Thus, IPv6 provides a way to assign a unique and directly addressable number to every electronic device on Earth for centuries to come. As IPv6 rolls out to the world, the modified mission for ICANN will be to inventory and categorize the device attached to each IP address. For instance, all the air conditioners in the world would be directly accessible from a single list. Likewise, for all computers, all automobiles, all cameras, all phones, all refrigerators, all articles of clothing, etc. Whoever has control over and access to this data will literally be able to control the entire world down to the last minutia. And that is the United Nations' exact mission: inventory, monitor, and control. But this concept was set in history long before the technology existed. The original Bible of Technocracy, the Technocracy Study Course, written in 1934, laid out the hard requirements necessary for its implementation. Number one, this is a direct quote from that book, the Technocracy Study Course, quote, register on a continuous 24-hour-per-day basis the total net conversion of energy. Number two, quote, by means of the registration of energy converted and consumed, make possible a balanced load. Number three, quote, provide a continuous inventory of all production and consumption. And number four, quote, provide a specific registration of the type, kind, etc. of all goods and services where produced and where used. And lastly, number five, quote, provide specific registration of the consumption of each individual, plus a record and description of the individual. That was found on page 232, if you want to check it out yourself. As I thoroughly documented in my book, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, the United Nations is indeed the engine of modern technocracy, and as such, it is acting in a perfectly predictable manner. It seeks to establish global scientific dictatorship where it controls all resources, all production, and limits all consumption to its own liking. These technocrats will dutifully apply their pseudoscientific methodology to every problem in the world and simply issue instructions to the net to, quote, make it so. Yes, free speech will decrease and censorship will increase, but that pales in comparison to the real prize of the Internet of Things that the United Nations desperately wants and needs in order to accomplish its own twisted goals. Congress never understood this when they passively let Obama fail to renew our contract with ICANN. However, Obama and his globalist handlers understood it perfectly well, which makes the deception and treachery of it even worse. Thanks to this scurrilous bunch, the world has just been sold into digital slavery, from which there will be no return. Let me reiterate again that ICANN is the cataloging service of the world for every IP address that's issued anywhere. It collects all of the information of whatever is attached to it, and it stores it in a single master database for the entire planet. You can understand why the United Nations might be interested in having access and control over such a database. So the story just published on December 29, 2019, to bring you up to date now, 3 years later, states as follows. The United Nations on Friday approved a Russian-led bid that aims to create a new convention on cybercrime, alarming rights groups and Western powers that fear a bid to restrict online freedom. The General Assembly approved the resolution sponsored by Russia and backed by China. And of course, you would expect them to sponsor it and back it, which would set up a committee of international experts in 2020. The panel will work to set up a, quote, comprehensive international convention on countering use of information and communications technologies for criminal purposes, close quote, the resolution said. The United States, European powers, and rights groups fear that the language is code for legitimatizing crackdowns on expression, with numerous countries defining criticism of the government as criminal. Imagine that. China heavily restricts internet searches to avoid topics sensitive to its communist leadership, as well as news sites with critical coverage. A number of countries have increasingly tried to turn off the internet, with India cutting off access in Kashmir in August after it stripped autonomy to the Muslim-majority region and Iran, taking much of the country offline as it cracked down on protests in November. Quote, it is precisely our fear that a new convention would allow the codification of an international and global level of these types of controls that's driving our opposition and our concern about this resolution, a U.S. official said. Any new U.N. treaty that spells out internet controls would be inimical to the United States' interest because that doesn't tally with the fundamental freedoms we see as necessary across the globe, he said. Human Rights Watch called the UN's resolution list of sponsors a rogues gallery of some of the Earth's most repressive governments. Well, Mr. U.S. official, I hate to tell you, but the horse is already out of the barn. 3 years ago, when control over the internet was thrown out into the ether space by President Barack Hussein Obama. And yes, the title to this story was UN Approves New Internet Convention Backed by Russia and China. You can go there and read that. I suggest maybe printing it out too for posterity in case the story ever gets taken down. But now you have some idea of what's going on with ICANN and control over the internet. It's coming to a close, my friend, and the United States can do nothing to stop it. What was a real shame, by the way, is that ICANN had a guaranteed renewal clause in its contract with the United States. As long as we signed the contract before it expired, we were absolutely positively guaranteed to extend the relationship we had with ICANN, and we had signed that same agreement for many years previously. But Barack Hussein Obama decided, nope, ain't going to do it in 2016. So long, ICANN. See you later. See you around. So now the world's cataloging system is not under the control of the United States, but rather it's floating into control of the United Nations. The last story I want to really emphasize today is written by my good acquaintance, John Rappaport, called A Deeper Understanding of Technocracy. And I wrote at the top of this, investigative journalist John Rappaport has a clear understanding of modern and historic technocracy and is able to paint a crystal clear word picture on where it is taking us in the near future. And I encouraged everybody, read this! Exclamation point. And I'll say that to you as well. I will read it to you now. It's not very long, but I also encourage you to go and print this article out or go to John's blog. There's a link at the end of the article and print it out there. But get your hands on it and start sharing this with people that you know that don't get it, that just don't understand. John has a deep understanding of technocracy. I'm very glad that he has read my books in some detail. We've had communications about them. He also follows technocracy.news, and he understands it perfectly well. So here's what he writes. Technocracy is the basic agenda and plan for ruling global society from above, so we need to understand it from several angles. Consider a group of enthusiastic, forward-looking engineers in the early 20th century. They work for a company that has a contract to manufacture a locomotive. Well, this is a highly complex piece of equipment. On one level, workers are required to make the components to spec, and then they must put them all together. These tasks are formidable. On another level, various departments of the company must coordinate their efforts. This is also viewed as a technological job. That is, organizing is considered a technology. When the locomotive is finished and delivered, and when it runs on its tracks and pulls a train, a great and inspiring victory is won. And then, the engineers begin to think about the implications. Suppose the locomotive was society itself. Suppose society was the finished product. Couldn't society be put together in a coordinated fashion? And couldn't the technology of organizing things be utilized for this job? Why bother with endlessly arguing and lying politicians? Why should they be in charge? Isn't that an obvious losing proposition? Well, of course it is. But engineers could lay out and build a future society that would benefit all people. Hunger, disease, and poverty could be wiped out. Eliminating them would be part of the uncompromising blueprint. Well, this insight hit engineers and technicians like a ton of bricks. Of course, all societies have been failures for the same reason. The wrong people were in charge. Armed with this new understanding, engineers of every stripe began to see what was needed. A revolution in thinking about societal organization. Science was the new king, and science would rule. Of course, for an engineered world to work, certain decisions would have to be made about the role of the individual. Every individual. You couldn't have an airtight plan if every human were free to pursue his own objectives. Too many variables, too much confusion, too much conflict. Well, that problem could be solved. The individual's actions would be tailored to fit the coordinated operations of the planned society. The individuals would be inserted into a preordained slot. He would be, quote, one of the components of the locomotive. His life would be connected to other lives to produce an exemplary shape. Yes, this could imply a few problems, but those problems would be worked out. They would have to be worked out, because the overriding goal was the forming of a world organization. What would you do if one bolt, an individual human, and one wheel of a locomotive was the wrong size? Well, you go back and correct that error. You'd remake the bolt. Among sincere technocrats, the overall vision superseded the glaring problems, but other people entered the game. High echelon globalists saw technocracy as a system they could use to control the population. Control was their goal, period. What happened to the individual in the process was of no concern to them. The individual had freedom, or he didn't have freedom, and the globalist overtly intended to wipe out that freedom, erasing hunger, poverty, illness. Nonsense. For the globalists, those realities would be exacerbated. Sick, weak, and debilitated people were easier to rule and control and manage. Essentially, a vastly misguided vision of the future technocratic utopia was hijacked. Something bad was made much worse. I will interject here. Who did that hijacking? Of course, we know that the global elite organization that performed this nefarious deed was none other than the Trilateral Commission, founded in 1973, co-founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski. You can read my book to get all the details. In a nutshell, this is the history of technocracy. A locomotive is a society? No. That was the first fatally flawed idea. Everything that followed was increasingly psychotic. Unfortunately, many people in our world believe in globalism. If you could call a partially vague view a legitimate belief, they dreamily float on all the propaganda cover stories. Greatest good for the greatest number of people. No more poverty. Equality of sharing. Reducing the carbon footprint. A green economy. Sustainable development. International cooperation. Engineering production and consumption of goods and services for the betterment of everyone. And all of this delivered from a central platform of altruistic guides. If you track down the specifics that sit under these pronouncements, you discover a warped system of planning that delivers misery and de facto slavery to the global population. And the link he puts on this text is a link to Technocracy Rising, by the way. The collective utopia turns out to be a sham, John concludes. Waking up is hard to do. Breaking up is hard to do. They must be done, however. A workable technological fix is a very nice achievement when the product is a machine. But transferring that glow of victory to the whole of society is an illusion. Anything that calls itself education would tackle the illusion as the first order of business. And there you have it, one of the most clear, succinct descriptions of technocracy that I have heard in 2019. I hope you will take it to heart, maybe print it out, make copies of it, pass it around, maybe get some extra copies of Technocracy Rising or Technocracy, the Hard Road to World Order, or perhaps go to the website, technocracy.news, and read through each one of the 12 days of technocracy, which were originally written, of course, as the 12 days of Christmas. But now Christmas has passed, and I changed the name to the 12 days of technocracy. Those foundational articles will give you a lot of information to help clarify any confusion that you have in your mind over what this animal is. You will understand it if you want to. It doesn't take a lot of work, but it takes a little work. I hope you go for it. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. Have a great new year. We'll see you next time.